Hello and welcome back, guys. I'm Jojo Fraser. It's time for a Mojo Injection, episode 58. I am so excited for this one. In fact, when I was asked last year, when I was launching the podcast, so who do you want on it? What are your dream guests? And this guy, Mr. Gavin Oates, aka Freddie Mercury, he's going to hate me for saying that, was high on the list. I just love him. I love his quirky mind. I love his books. I love his motivational talk. He's a comedian, managing director of the Tree of Knowledge. Who are doing amazing things in schools and companies. And it's all about mindset and positive psychology and energy and purpose and passion. So you can tell I'm absolutely loving it. You guys know me by now. I am so thrilled so many of you keep coming back, and I'm delighted to give you so much mojo with Gav this week. I was looking to see where people are tuning in, and whoa, it's gone global. You're all around the world. Oh, that makes me so happy. Where are you right now? Are you near a beach? Oh, hashtag jealous. No, it is just amazing to know so many people are tuning in globally now and getting their mojo hookups. And you know, you can come here, you can pick and choose what you like. Some of it you have to be very open-minded. Hub said to me, man, you're too open-minded, love. You're a salesman's dream. I was like, chill out, right? I love people. You know, every time I meet someone, I am prepared to have a fascinating conversation. I am open to it. I'm like, Hubs, we're vibing on different channels here, right? I'm on Radio 1 and you're just way on a different, like, we're the frequencies. But apparently that makes for an amazing relationship. Go figure. Well, we're still together after 12, we've not killed each other. Has it been about 12 years? Yeah, but sometimes I'm like, can you just come on my frequency, boy? And he's probably like, get over it. And you know, you're all welcome here. You might be skeptical. You might be an analyst like my hubs. That's his profession. His job is to really, he'd be a terrifying lawyer. I've heard him on calls. He is thorough. He doesn't miss a thing. And he's he just questions things. I question things, but probably with a more open mind. And we're just different that way. So you may come here going, oh, this mindset stuff, I just don't know. I'm wary of it. Some weeks you may just be totally tuning in and feeling it all, and some weeks maybe, you know, someone said to me, oh, one of your episodes last year was like giving me anxiety because the person on it was so like knowledgeable, but it was almost like too many tips. She was almost too knowledgeable and I didn't know which pieces of advice to take, and I was like, ah. Oh man, I feel like that all the time, like seriously. I've been a mental health researcher for 5 years now, and I'm always going to do it, it's my passion, but sometimes I get so much information, it's trying to really work out what is true to my values, what I really am happy to accept, and if I'm not happy to accept things, why? And that can be, it can bring on a bit of anxiety and a bit of a strange mood, so I feel you. Listen, it's not always easy stuff, and that's why we sing at the end. I didn't actually make Gav sing. I sang out one of his favourite songs from a Fringe show, but Gav performs all the time, so I was like, let's just chill. I really want some chill time with you and your quirky mind. Oh, he's brilliant. So his books, Shine, Oh Come On, Get It On. I always want to sing Take That. I've underlined it so much. I love Shine with Dr. Andy Cope, the UK's happiness doctor. He's written Diary of a Brilliant Kid. That was an instant bestseller. It's all over the place. My kids both have signed copies. Whoop whoop. And Zest has just been released. So if life's giving you lemons, oh, let's zest that puppy up. Gav, congrats on the book. I can't wait to read it. I'm so happy to have him on the podcast because he's a legend, and I know you guys are going to get something from it. I know you are. So just appreciate this time. Listen with an open mind and enjoy it. Just sit back or keep walking, running, trekking, whatever you're doing, driving, drive safe. And just enjoy this time for you because you're freaking awesome. Judge less, love more, and let's keep spreading the mojo. Please give Gav so many stars. He deserves 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5. No fours, no threes, no twos, no ones. 5. Awesome. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.
It's all right.
It's amazing to have you here. And I'm a massive fan of your books.
Thank you.
I think when I hear you give a keynote, it's a bit like a kind of Freddie Mercury, like, takes to the
stage. I'm taking it.
I just want to be fabulous. Have you seen the part in the film when he says, "I just want to be fabulous, darling"?
Yeah.
I love it.
Joe, I love it. I think he is a hero of mine. Like, when my son was born, you mean, obviously you're discussing names for 9 months, and we were set on the name, but I went to register his birth on my own.
Risky.
And it was this wonderful moment where the lady in the registry office asked the question, does he have a middle name? And I just had that moment where I was like, oh, like, I could go to town here and no one has to know.
Yeah,
I mean, it'll go on the certificate, but once it's there, and we don't have to tell anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell my wife, I'd be in a lot of trouble, but I genuinely thought about putting Freddie Mercury II in as a middle name.
Not just Freddie.
Or no, that'd be really rubbish. So his name's Kian, and our surname's Oates. Originally, I wanted to call him Optimus. So Optimus Oates sounds amazing.
It's quite
only in my mind. But it could have been Kian... Optimus Freddie Mercury II Prime Oates.
That's pretty cool.
Mick Jagger / Pink Floyd.
But you stopped yourself.
Yeah, he didn't get that.
But you do have a cat.
I have a cat called David Bowie. We call it Bowie, but its full name is David Bowie. I wanted to call it Bowie. My daughter wanted to call it Dave. We've got this beautiful piece of artwork of David Bowie in the house. And I said to her, "You know who that is, don't you?" And she was like, "That's David Bowie." And I was like, "David? About Dave Bowie?" And she went, "Oh yeah." So we'll call him David Bowie, but we'll just call him Bowie. And she went, "All right."
That's so cool.
And he's got orange, and he's got a wee bit of orange here. Not quite a lightning strike, but in my mind, it's a lightning strike.
Such a cute cat.
It's the coolest cat and the cutest cat ever.
Oh. Yeah.
But I love Freddie Mercury, and I always have done. And I remember watching the original Live Aid. Not from the film, but the actual day in, was it 1984, well, 5?
I was born in 2, so...
I mean, it's a long time ago,
yeah.
And I was just a kid, but I can remember it. And I remember, it's just when he comes on stage, the way he moves, when he's holding the mic, and just that, he just gives off something extraordinary.
Yeah.
So to even be in the same sentence...
So you'll take that compliment.
I'm taking it. I am nothing like Freddie Mercury, but I would love...
To some people you are.
I'll take it.
Take it.
I love him.
Do we all want to be fabulous?
Do we all want
to
be fabulous?
Do you think we all want to be fabulous at something?
No.
Do you not think?
No, I don't think we all want to be fabulous at something. I think we all have a desire to be accepted.
Yep.
As or for something,
uh-huh.
Which I think is different from being wanting to be fabulous. I think people have different ideas of what being amazing at something actually means.
Yeah.
You know, we all have different levels of contentment.
Uh-huh.
You know, I spent a huge amount of my life desperate to make it in comedy.
Yeah.
But what does that even mean? Like, to make it doesn't, I've actually written about this recently for something, and to make it is not a dream.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't mean anything. Because if you're trying to make it, that'll never end.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, you know, people talk about the chase for happiness. If you're chasing happiness, you'll never get it.
Yeah.
Because it's now. Your happiness is now, and it's being in the moment. I think having that dream and that goal to make it or to be fabulous, it doesn't mean anything. Uh-huh. So it's about... Yeah, like, I think there's different levels of contentment, so I don't know if that answers your question, but it's a no.
Yeah. It's just funny, because you were saying you can be quite a private person, but on the stage, you know, you just come to life.
Yeah.
So do you feel like, part of you really needs to have that performance side, where you're really getting people's attention, going, look, I've got something to say, and you're listening, and it's, yes.
No, I do. I love being on stage.
Uh-huh.
I struggle a wee bit off stage, though.
Yeah.
So I did The Fringe for years and years and years, and my goal from the age of, I don't know, 11 was to be on stage, I was obsessed with Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer. I was obsessed with programmes like Bottom with Rick Mail and Adrian Edmondson, Monty Python, and this idea of being able to be on stage as a character.
Yeah.
Wear silly costumes, say silly things, and make people feel great, like really great, and really like laugh. Uh-huh. It was this need to get up and try it. It was almost like I had found a group of people who were like me. There was maybe a place for me.
Yeah.
So when I used to do the Fringe, mm-hmm. I would be incredibly nervous.
Yeah.
You can do 26 nights in a row, and I would stand backstage every night pacing up and down thinking, what am I doing?
Yeah.
This is awful. Like, I could be at home. Yeah. I could have my feet up. I could be with my kids. I could have a normal job. But as soon as you're on stage...
Yeah.
And you get that first laugh or that first gasp. This is why we do what we do. So I don't know if I have an absolute need to be on stage, but I love being up in front of a group of people where I know I'm able to have that positive impact.
Mm-hmm.
But even if I go back further in my career, when I was a primary school teacher,
mm-hmm.
I was so nervous before the kids came in every day.
Really?
But then they turn up. And it's like, go. And you've got 9 o'clock to 3:30, where you have to take them on this wonderful journey every day.
Yeah.
And then they would go out the door, and I'd be like, that was amazing. I'd
wake up the next... such a good teacher.
I hope so.
Yeah, I could see you being rocking it.
I actually met a former pupil the other day who's 25, married with kids. I was like, oh my God.
Oh.
I taught her when she was in primary 7.
Oh my goodness.
So I felt extremely, extremely grown up meeting her. But it was cool. But you know, I hope I was a good teacher, and I like to think I was. There's something truly amazing about being a primary school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard job, though.
Oh, my mum said that. She was one for, 25 years, maybe a bit longer. She stopped work for 15 years to raise the three of us.
Yeah.
But she would always say, it's the hardest job, but so rewarding.
Yeah, I think education in general at the moment, I think I would go as far to say that the system at the moment, for all its positives, and there are a lot of positives, and for all the amazing teachers, and that is most teachers are amazing, I think the system fundamentally is broken. And I think the pressure and the stress, not just on the pupils, but on the kids and on parents, is just huge.
It's great. It's scary. I get messages all the time. Parents saying to me, like, my teenager's so anxious about exams. Could you recommend a psychologist or a book? Or it's chronic.
Yeah.
And we need to make changes.
Yeah, I think so. And my wife's a deputy head teacher of a high school, so I can see it from their side as well. And it's a full-on profession to be a part of.
Yeah.
I love the fact that through our business Tree of Knowledge, we still work in schools, we still get to work with young people every day, both primary and secondary. We get to help teachers and parents. But being honest, I'm glad I'm not a teacher anymore.
Yeah.
There's bits of that I miss, but not many.
It would be really hard. Yeah. But that's amazing, the work you do, and I think we just need to be positive rather than focusing on the negative side and all the stats and the anxiety. It's saying, absolutely. Well, look, what can we do? How can we turn this around?
Well, there's already so much going on. I mean, the vast majority of teachers are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
They're wonderful, caring, energised human beings who, some might be a bit broken at the moment as they run into the summer, the summer months, the summer holidays. But there is good stuff out there, and we just need to always be aware of that. Because I think there's a lot of parents out there that don't understand teaching and do hear and see a lot of negatives, whether that's from their kids or the press. But actually, teachers are amazing, and they are doing a good job.
Yep.
Mainly. Sometimes.
Well said. Woohoo! So I've got so many things I want to talk to you about. I think we should start with Shine.
Cool.
You are such a bit. So you've got a few songs actually with Shine in it. Well, jealous. Not many Mojo songs. So I totally loved Shine. I made notes all over it. I scribbled. I told everyone about it. I just think it's great. And I love the story about you and Dr. Andy Cope. And, you know, he's this happiness doctor and you've admired him and his work.
Yeah.
And he's heard you speak. He thinks, wow, that's Freddie Mercury up there. I want to write a book with him. And you've made it happen. That's so inspirational.
Yeah.
And there's this funny part at the start of the book. And Andy writes about, you'd said to him, he sent you some material and you said, is this your best work? And he was like, well, try my best. I'll go back. And then you asked him again, and he's like, I'm trying my best. And then he was like, is it your best work? You're like, yeah. He's like, yeah. And you're like, okay, I'll read it now. I was like, is this a true story or is it just a comedy?
What do you think?
I wouldn't be surprised.
It's whatever you want it to be.
Oh, you're going to leave me hanging, aren't
yeah,
you?
It, do you know, we had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun and we really didn't know each other at all.
Right.
Like, even by the time we were writing the book, we really didn't know each other. Mm. In some ways, we kind of still don't. Like, we definitely know each other a lot better. Uh-huh. But you mentioned that, I really did look up to Andy. Like, I really admired him. He was a bit of a hero of mine. His book, The Art of Being Brilliant, and I know he's got dozens of books, including a lot of kids' books like the Spy Dog series and so on. But mm-hmm. but The Art of Being Brilliant for me is a long. There's two books for me that I think really kind of switched me on to the whole personal development, self help thing. And I'm mm-hmm. probably using those terms quite loosely. And that was firstly Tuesdays with Maury mm-hmm. by. I was about to say J.M. Barrie. It's not J.M. Barrie, that was Peter Pan. Tuesdays with Maury was... Oh, it's terrible. What's the guy's
name? I'm going to add it to my reading list now.
That is awful, because I'm a massive fan. Anyway, Tuesdays with Maury is a phenomenal read.
Okay.
But a close second for me was The Art of Being Brilliant.
Oh, second.
And the thing... Well, it was second only because I read it second.
Ah, right.
Tuesdays with Maury was the first ever book I had read in that genre that made me, well, at all, but it was also the first ever book that made me cry.
Aww.
Like made me feel amazing at the same time. So it took me on a real journey, but then I read Andy's book and I was actually really pissed off. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, of course. Uncut.
I was really pissed off when I read it because it was my book.
Yeah.
Like, I should have written it because, like, the way it was written, the language, the tone, a bit of comedy, some real deep stuff, but all mixed in. It wasn't cheesy. It wasn't corny. I was pissed off.
Yeah.
It was the book I had thought about writing, and I remember thinking, who's this arsehole? That's true. And then I started to look into him a wee bit more, and uh-huh. I was like, oh my God, this guy's doing what I think I'm doing, but he's doing it on a different level. And then I started to catch little bits of his talks online and things. Mm-hmm. And then one day, as it says at the start, Shine, we found out we were going to be speaking at the same event. Mm-hmm. I was following him on Twitter. He had no interest, or that sounds a bit harsh. He didn't know who I was, nor should he have. But I found out he was going to be speaking at the end, mm-hmm. closing keynote, and I was opening keynote. And I was gutted because I was going to have to leave because I had another talk to give at a different conference. And I thought, well, he's not going to rock up at 10 to 9. For a 9 o'clock start, because he's not on till 4. Mm. Who rocked up at 10 to 9? But Dr. Andy Cope
came to see you.
I like to think so. He didn't, but he and I, he loved it, and we laughed. He laughed a lot, but then we sat and had lunch together, and we laughed a lot, and mm-hmm. he just kept asking all these questions about what we do and what I do, and we just clicked.
That's
and
brilliant.
I kind of joked about writing a book, and he didn't really respond, and I was like, shit, blew that one. But over time the communication upped, and then he eventually said, right, go and send me some stuff, and I sent him some stuff initially, and the rest is history.
So exciting. Such a good book, so well done.
I love it. I actually read it not that long ago. I read it from start to finish again because I was trying to find something, mm-hmm. and I ended up just reading the whole thing again.
Yeah.
And I know it makes me sound like a total arsehole, but
no.
I think it's brilliant. Like,
yeah.
I absolutely love it. And I think we've written a book that is, I passionately believe it's one of the best self-help books out there. And
I'd agree.
And I'm really proud of it.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And there's so much you can take from it, because I think we all want happiness. We don't want to be patronised, you know, because it's like, yeah, we can be so happy and shine and... That's great, but there's a lot of issues out there. We all struggle with our mental health. I just love the way, like, the things you speak about, plot twists, and I totally relate to that. Like, trying to have a joke of someone, not joke, but put a spin on it as something, like, if you're rejected, you go,
yeah.
well, actually, that means someone better is going to come.
Yeah,
or
absolutely.
Just trying to tell yourself that,
yeah.
even though your ego is kicking in and saying, oh, why do you? And it's very easy to get defensive, and why
yeah.
don't they like me? And,
and it's important that we teach that. From a young age. I mean, I had this exact conversation with my son yesterday. He was desperate to be house captain mm-hmm. in his primary school next year, because they're starting to get ready for the nominations now. the vote happens into summer holidays, and then when they start back in primary seven, house captains, vice captains, and he worked really hard on his 1 minute speech, really hard. And we were under the impression that it was the teachers would then choose who goes through, and then the kids get to, like a wee mini campaign, and then the kids get to vote. Turns out it was the kids that were voting. So everyone just voted for the best friends. It was a popularity vote, which I never won in school, and my son didn't win. And his attitude was, something better will come along. And I'm like, that's my boy.
Oh yes, you're gutted. So proud when you get that.
I was gutted though, I was hurting, because I knew he wanted it.
Yeah.
And I was like, you okay? And he went, yeah. He said, I'm a bit sad, but it just means something better will come along. And I was like, yes.
So good. They can teach us a lot, these little people. Bonnie has reacted better than I have to things if she's rejected or something's gone wrong. And I'm like, oh! And she's like, it's fine, Mum. It's fine. It's just
funny, though, isn't it, how it, under the age of 10, we just are better at dealing with shit.
Yeah, we really are.
Maybe not everything, but a lot of it we are. We, as adults, certainly for me as an adult, I struggle a lot to put things into perspective at times. Whereas my kids are just like, deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, resilience, we can learn so much from our kids. How do you have any tips for people that struggle with picking themselves back up when something goes wrong?
I think the cop-out answer is it's our mindset and it's our attitude, but I think there's so much more to it than that. I mean, if you're really down, I think for me, exercise, diet, I mean, all these things come into it. I mean, if you've just had a wee knockback, I mean, it's sometimes it's easy to brush it off and do the whole something else will come along, but if you are down, it hurts, you know. And if, especially if you do struggle with maybe depression, maybe anxiety and anything like that, then you really are low. You're in your bed, you're eating your tub ice cream and you don't ever want to do anything else. But I think if it's that extreme, it's a bit more of a journey, it's a bit more of an effort, and it's making sure you're surrounded by the right people as well.
Yeah,
you know, if you've got people around you, like, I'm really lucky that I've got my wife Ali. Ali's, I get no sympathy, none, because I've, she's learned that that's the wrong thing to do for me.
Yeah,
I often say Ali's less sympathy and more symphony. She's able to create this almost like this wall of sound around me that just gives me a boot up the arse and gets me out of bed again.
If I'm
feeling down, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the mother in her, maybe it's the teacher, maybe it's the musician.
Yeah.
That ability to do what mums and great teachers do. But I think, yeah, but there's so much for anybody that's down. I think it is easy to say to people, be more positive. But that, again, there's more to it than that. There's almost, you do need to change your thinking, but you're almost kind of reframing your thinking in a way where you almost, whatever the negative thought is, you're starting to distance yourself from it in some ways.
Okay.
I read a wonderful book called The Happiness Trap.
Okay.
About a year and a half ago now. And there's this bit in it, I'm trying to remember the exact wording, it's something like, I appear to be having the thought that. So if, for example, you were thinking, I'm a failure. You know, if you've had a rejection and you're feeling really down and the thought you keep having is that you're a failure, and it's just getting you lower and lower, the idea is that you think about that thought, I'm a failure, and then you change it to, I'm having the thought that I'm a failure.
Love that.
And instantly you feel the wee distance from it, and then you do that for 10, 20 seconds, and then the next step is, I appear to be having the thought that I'm a failure.
Yep.
And by changing your language and then practicing that, it actually feels like you've just distanced yourself from it. And honestly, it's just this wee weight off the shoulders, and it's a wee technique that I found myself having to use a couple of times with certain things. When the anxiety's kicking in and you just like, I appear to be having the thought that this isn't going to work, rather than go, this isn't going to work, and you start to distance yourself. But it is practice. It's like mindfulness. You have to practice it.
Yeah.
It's like riding a bike. You kind of just jump on and go.
You need to train it's mental fitness is a buzzword at the moment, but you need to train the mind. Do you still practice mindfulness? Do you have time to do that?
I try and make time.
Yeah.
I could be better. A lot better.
It's not.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm never going to claim that I do it every day. Sometimes I feel like I'm doing it every day.
Yeah.
But I think it's, everyone's got time to do it. And anyone that says they don't is talking bollocks.
Yeah.
Get up 10 minutes earlier, go to your bed 10 minutes earlier and do it there. I need to get better at it. But I love it, and I think it's, I'm not the best at it. I can do it, and I've got better at it, but I still feel my mind going away off.
Yeah.
Maybe not every time. Like, when I started doing mindfulness, I couldn't do it.
Yeah,
it's hard. I just couldn't. My brain was just like, ping, 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 ping. Whereas now, I'm able to bring myself back. Mm-hmm. And I know, I mean, it's all in the breathing, but I'm able to use that now, like you're meant to.
Yeah.
But that's only come over time.
Because there's different tools you can do. Your breathing, you can do sounds. I quite like that one.
Yeah.
If you listen to the birds or wherever you are, or planting your feet, their roots. Mm-hmm. Like that, but some things work for others. But.
Well, this is it. This thing I love about all these kind of techniques is you're going to have to do a bit of a pick and mix, and see what works for you. It's like in writing the books. There's, the book I'm working on at the moment. I'm writing about things that I do to tackle negative thoughts, anxiety, and so on. It won't work for everyone, but if one thing works, then we're rocking, you know.
Love it. So motivational. So when I first heard you, something that really was apparent to me was the way you spoke about your wife, Ali, and you were just so positive and you were talking about how she changes the world. And I just thought, oh, what a nice thing. Because in my book, I speak about Hubs, some good stuff, some bad.
Yeah.
People are like, I can't believe you were so honest. I'm like, I don't know why he's like water off a duck's back.
Yeah.
I'm like, just say what you want. But it was so, so nice. And I thought, in the book, it talks about when relationships get samey, a bit like a boofy car or whatever. And so many people struggle with this. And it's, how do you keep, do you think you need to, because if you're two people that go out and make a difference, then is that just a deadly combination? Or how do we keep that freshness?
Yeah, well, we're not perfect. And we don't claim to be. Ali is an incredibly driven, hardworking, professional young woman.
Yeah.
She is extraordinary. She is held in huge esteem by the teaching profession in Scotland for the work that she's implemented in the schools that she's been in.
Mm-hmm.
We're very lucky that we have two young, healthy kids
mm-hmm.
who get on great.
Yeah.
Who are best friends.
Do they argue?
No, not really.
Really?
Not really. And that's the response everybody gives. They're like, really? Like, they must... I mean, they have moments where they irritate each other a wee bit, but they are best friends.
What's the age gap?
My son, Kian, is 11, and my daughter, Ellis, is 7.
Okay.
I'm sure we'll have our moments.
Yeah.
The older they get, well, we might not. We might not, but we make sure, as a family, that we have great times together.
Mm-hmm.
We make sure we have great times not together.
Yeah.
At weekends, we're not really social animals. We don't party.
Mm-hmm.
We're not out getting shit faced every weekend with our friends. We spend that quality time with our families. But at the same time, if I want to go and see someone, I can. If Ali wants to go and see someone, one of her pals, then she can. That sounds like we're going to see other people, didn't it? That's not what I meant. But we just make time to make sure that the four of us together. One of the things we love to do is go away.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking lavish holidays. I'm talking just a wee weekend to a wee Airbnb in North Berwick or up to Aviemore or something. And it doesn't have to be expensive.
Yep.
It's just that time out together,
yeah.
Walking on the beach, getting some fresh air, making food together in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Um,
away from all the house, well, I was going to say housework. I guess if you're cooking, you still got dishes, but in a different environment.
Well, I think physically removing yourself out of your day-to-day environment is quite important as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we just have a great sense of humour as well. Like, we can take the piss out of each other. We can laugh at each other. We can talk about anything.
Yeah, so important.
We're also very fortunate that we have jobs that we love.
Yeah.
Yes, we have rubbish days like everybody else does, but we're not bringing tons of shite back into the house every night. We're not one of these couples that just sit on an evening and bitch about their jobs because we love our jobs.
Yeah.
We have a wee moan and a groan every now and then, but don't we all?
Yeah. Mood hoovers.
Yeah, that's the ones. But Ali's amazing. She really is amazing. She uh, She keeps me in check and she gives me a proper ass kicking if I need it. Like I say, I get no sympathy at all. Because I think I would lap that up.
Yeah, you'd be
and
like...
Do you know, she's told me before, I would wallow. Yeah. If I was allowed, I would wallow. Like if I was having a shit week and something had gone wrong at work, or, you know, if the book wasn't, nobody was liking the book and the reviews were shit or whatever, I would wallow in it.
Yeah.
And I would. And I think she clocked that 20 years ago.
Wow.
And just went, I'm not having any of that shit.
Oh, that's so good.
But she is hard as nails.
I love
I'm
it.
Terrified of her.
She sounds a bit like my mum. My mum and dad have that dynamic.
Yeah.
Match being in heaven. Oh, I love it. It can be hard and a lot of people struggle, but I think what you're saying about talking, like communication, I had a divorce lawyer on here. Some people did use her after the podcast. But every time she sees, and it's all down to communication, people yeah. just aren't talking. Mm-hmm. And we're just kind of... The mood hoover thing, I think, is really interesting in the book. Because we can all be a mood hoover.
Yeah.
But, like, people will say to me, and I'm sure they say to you all the time, oh, you're so positive. Like, why are you always so positive? And it's... As the book says, it's a choice. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to choose to be positive.
Yeah.
So, in a traffic jam, I choose to smile. And people think I'm a weirdo. But I just don't like the negative energy. There are so many mood hoovers out there that are just putting the finger up, swearing, screaming. It's almost like they're looking for someone to take the frustration out in.
I think they love it.
Yeah.
I think there's people out there who love being the person in that family, or the person in that team, or the person in that job who is an arsehole.
Yeah.
Who is just miserable and shitty and grumpy and angry and negative and nippy about everything.
Yeah.
As you said, we can all be mood hoovers, mm-hmm. and there's times where I think it's okay to have a bit. It's a bit of a release.
Yeah.
But again, as you said, and as we say in the book, it is a choice.
Yeah.
And particularly in the family home, or particularly in work, you don't have to be a dick. Like you don't. You can be if you want.
Mm-hmm.
And if something's not going right, we can complain about everything, because no job's perfect,
mm-hmm.
and no person's perfect.
Yeah.
And I've worked with people in the past who, I think they're looking for perfection. I think they're searching for the holy grail, and because they're not getting it, they just complain and complain and complain. But what's interesting is they don't do something about it.
Yeah.
They don't offer a solution.
Yeah.
And for me that's key. So by all means, come to me with a moan,
mm-hmm.
but offer me a solution, an alternative. Because if you can't think of something, well, maybe I can't think of something.
Sometimes people, they don't want... If you start saying, well, this could be a solution, they don't want to hear it.
No, they don't.
No, I just want to...
Because they love it.
Yeah.
Because they're an arsehole.
So what about when it's someone we love? Just say it's your mum or your partner or whatever, mm-hmm. and they're just constantly hoovering up that.
So one of the things I've said quite often in presentations and stuff is there comes a point where it stops being funny.
Because
mm-hmm. I think to begin with, if you're in a job and you're coming home going, oh, this person said this, and it can be quite funny. It mm-hmm. can almost be quite entertaining when you're having a laugh and a joke. But when it just keeps picking over weeks, months, maybe years, if it's someone that you live with, it stops being funny.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember my dad used to moan about his job a lot.
Uh-huh.
It stopped being funny. Yeah. And then me and Ali, actually, when we met at uni, and after my 4 years, I taught for a couple of years, and by the end of that couple of years we were living together,
mm-hmm.
and I realised that since graduating I'd become a bit of a misery guts.
Mm-hmm.
I'd kind of lost sight of that why, that purpose that
yeah.
for going into teaching, and I got to a point where I realised it kind of stopped being funny.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, again, this is where the communication comes in. You know, if your partner is seriously unhappy in their job,
mm-hmm.
we have to be able to sit them down and say to them, I believe in you, go and do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
If it means we're on my salary for 6 months,
yeah.
we will make it work.
Yeah.
If the person that you love more than anyone is not happy, we have to help them set themselves free. We have to give them some kind of permission. We have to let them know that it's okay to quit your job.
Mm-hmm.
Or go for a different... You don't need to quit. You can at least look at what else is out there, bring them in the job adverts, do a bit of Googling on their behalf,
mm-hmm.
and give them the shove.
And it can be easy to get defensive if it's your partner saying something like, oh right, you need to change something in your job, or you need to the barriers come
yeah,
up and you're like, I don't need that. And
we especially don't want to hear it when we know it's true.
Yes.
We really, I mean, to be told that you're not happy and that you're complaining and bored and miserable about everything. None of us want to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's your other half or your parent or your child mm-hmm. that's telling you that, well, they love you. They're telling you for a reason, so...
Yeah, it's when it's coming from the people that you trust.
Oh, it hurts.
Oh, it hurts.
But we need to hear it.
But that nail on the head there, they love you.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
So that's why they want to do it.
Yeah.
Love it. So inspirational. Rock. and the kids love your next book, Diary of a Brilliant Kid. So
super proud of this.
Oh, it's just so good. So fun.
Yep.
Just love it. Are you, have you got a favourite part in the book?
Yep, Sweet Corn. So Sweet Corn is... It's just a one-page stupid story about a child getting excited about bits of sweet corn in their poo. but the which I know is ridiculous and childish and silly, but the book is aimed at children. Well, it's for everyone, but really, it's that kind of six, seven to 10, 11, really.
Do adults not still find that funny too?
Or? No, they do. They do. And actually, we've had adults who have read this and got more out of it than their kids did.
That's the thing. Because that's what we learn through play and fun. And
absolutely. But the thing about this book, because somebody said, is it just shine for young people? I was like, well, that wasn't the approach, but it is still positive psychology for kids.
Yeah.
So that Sweet Corn is my favourite, because it's about taking that really silly, rude, cheeky story and putting a spin on it. And, as I say, the story is about a kid pointing at the sweet corn in the toilet, and the idea is that we're trying to tell kids, it doesn't matter what you do, be proud of everything you produce, even the little things.
I just love it. See, I sometimes worry I'm too much like a big kid with the kids, so when their friends come around, they can be quite cheeky to me because I'm the fun one who makes jokes and takes part in all of that.
Yeah.
Where's the balance? Can we be too, as adults... Can we be too much? Can we play too much?
I don't think we can play too much. I mean, every child's different. Every parent's different. I would never tell anyone how to parent their kids. But I think we can certainly be too boring as adults.
Mm-hmm.
If we put it the other way, we can definitely be too sensible and too serious and too forgetful that it's okay to play.
Yeah.
You know, we wrote in Shine about how it's a scientific fact that children learn best through play, but it's also a fact that adults learn best through play, but they don't tell us that. They keep it from us. You know, we wrote about how playfulness is broken up into three things, and that's imagination, creativity, and innovation. And if you think how important those three things are to relationships,
mm-hmm.
to our jobs, to our businesses, to our careers, to everything, you know, if we're not allowing ourselves to be playful, then we're removing some fundamental skills that we all need to thrive and to flourish.
How do you release that then, that bit of magic, that creativity, not the part of your mind that's feeling fear? You know, a quote I love is beautiful minds are free of fear. I think that's just lovely. So when you're in that zone, whatever you like to call it, you'd probably call it magic, wouldn't you? I'd call it mojo.
Yeah, that wee piece of magic.
So what helps you release that?
For me personally, so there's probably a few different things for me. One of the biggest things, the biggest learning curve for me, I think, has been the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Having kids for me has reminded me of the kind of beauty of that, just that simplistic approach to everything.
Yeah.
Everything. Just the idea of being excited about the day ahead.
Yeah.
Kind of switches me on. You know, like my daughter for her 7th birthday last November, I'm saying to her, what do you want? And she said, can I write a list? I was like, well, it's not Christmas, you know, but okay, keen to see what she was going to write. And there was like four things, and it said 100 balloons, 400 ice lollies.
I love that.
400 ice lollies, and a cat and a stripy door handle.
Where's the stripy door handle? That's awesome.
Uh-huh. But that's exactly it. I was looking at it going, 100 balloons, 400 ice lollies, already awesome,
yeah.
A cat... Now, I love cats, and we did eventually, not for her birthday, but we got Bowie, as you know. and a stripy door handle.
That is just and legendary.
Just that bit there, I was like, why are we settling for door handles that are not stripy in life?
I just love that.
There's a metaphor for all sorts right there.
I'll repeat that statement, that's too good.
But why are we settling for plain door handles and plain everything else? And I just thought, it's that there. So she could have wanted a new door handle.
Yeah.
Why would she want a new door handle? She doesn't. She wants a stripy door handle. And I think if you look at life, we can want a life or we can want a stripy life or a polka dot life. So my kids have really helped me to remember the importance of playfulness and that wee piece of magic. Being a primary school teacher, I definitely had that. Mm-hmm. Being in stand-up comedy, the show that I was involved in was crazy, full-on batshit crazy, if that's a thing. Crazy characters, and that allowed me to really play in. I mean, our show, it was an over 18 show. I mean, we could do anything and get away with it, and it was fine. It was this real release, but it's not real life.
Yeah,
you know. So my kids,
escapism.
Yeah, music. Mm. I know you're a big fan of music.
Oh, we're playing music constantly.
But also things like running.
Yeah,
you know, I've discovered running over the last couple of years, and what a release.
The runner's high.
I ran this morning. I was out at 6 o'clock this morning in the rain. I didn't really want it. I nearly didn't get out of my bed. I snoozed my alarm, which I never do.
Really?
Alarm goes off once and I'm up now.
Oh, that's resilient.
But this morning I hit it because I thought, I don't really feel like it. And I was like, no, get up, go. And as soon as I'm out, I mean, whilst I don't love the actual running,
yeah,
it feels good that you're out there and you know you're out there. And I did a 5K. And I got back to the front door, a bit sore, a bit tired, beetroot red, sweat pissing down my face, looking awful. I felt amazing.
Oh.
And I've been feeling great most of my day because of it. And it's a sense of release, and it just fixes in here.
Yeah.
I mean, physically, you get fitter and healthier. But so yeah, I think for me, in terms of finding that wee piece of magic, my kids, exercise, music, family.
Do you feel like when you're running, you get those moments of clarity?
Yes.
I feel like it just comes to me, like best ideas or creativity.
I need to run with my laptop attached over here and I can run like this. No, I've definitely had some of my best ideas whilst out running. And most of the time I remember them.
Yeah.
But there's stuff I don't remember. And I just have to think, well, wasn't meant to be.
Yeah. No, but there's nothing like it. But sometimes it's so hard to get out the door. And it's a balance as well, because I got to a point where I was so addicted and I was going out all the time. Like, I remember Ian came around, my brother, and he was like, don't go out running. It was a Saturday morning. He's like, it's really slippy. I was like, I'm going. Went out. I was on my butt.
Ice skates on.
Yeah. I was lying on my butt within 30 seconds, like big bruise. But I was just so adamant. How often do you run? Do you have rest days as well?
I do. So it's alternate weeks because I kind of try and just go every second day. So it's usually 3 or 4 times a week.
Great.
So I ran the London Marathon 2 years ago and I had trained for 2 years for that. And that was the start of my running journey.
Uh-huh.
I mean, at school, I was hugely sporty. Mum was a PE teacher. We were encouraged to play every sport under the sun. Mm-hmm. Loved my sport. But when I went to uni, it all just went downhill.
Yeah,
And I ballooned at university. I mean,
so easy to do.
I'm currently just over 13 stone. I got to 15 and a half stone at university within about 2.5 years. And I went to uni about 11 and a half stone. So, I mean, I piled the weight on.
Was
and
it beer? Or
just beer. Yeah, beer. No exercise. Tons of beer and junk food.
Yeah.
It was magic. I absolutely loved it. But got a bit of a fright at the end of the 4 years. But so in 2012, I lost my dad to pancreatic cancer. And that's, whilst there's lots of things at play there, that's all diet. It's all diet. It's all exercise. It's all alcohol. It's all these things contribute towards that. So whilst I got a huge fright when I lost my dad, it took me a couple of years to then do something about it.
Yeah.
And then it was running that was my kind of out from that. And I literally couldn't run around the block. And our block is tiny. Or we've moved since then, but it was a tiny block. I'm probably thinking about 8 houses. I couldn't even run around it. I was so embarrassed. I was so overweight. And you know, I read something once that said, By that point, I was a full-time professional motivational speaker. Mm-hmm. And I read something that said, you can't trust a fat motivational speaker.
Do you agree with that? How fat are we talking? Because what if you just love the odd donut?
Oh, no, I mean, I wasn't grossly obese, but I was overweight.
Yeah.
And do I believe it? I'm going to say yes.
Because it's a bit like, can you trust a skinny chef?
I don't think that's right at all. I think that's entirely different. Because a chef's job is not to feed you up and make you fat. A chef's job is to cook you awesome food.
Yeah. So you believe you can be a foodie and have a six pack?
Oh, yeah. I know people who are entirely ripped. I know people who are hugely ripped who have a wonderful palate, shall we say, and are right into their food and eat a lot.
How do they do it then?
Burn it all off.
Just go work.
Because they run and they work out. Yeah. But the thing about never trust a fat motivational speaker, like, I do kind of get it. Like,
yeah.
Like, if you can't motivate yourself to simply look after yourself,
yeah.
Well, why are you on the stage telling everyone to look after themselves?
Yeah.
And to live a happy, positive life? Like, there is, it's all connected. I mean,
Buddha
physical
had
health.
An unhealthy BMI.
Yeah. Physical health is mental health, though. You know,
yeah, it's connected.
It's all the same.
Yeah, and when your mental health's stronger, you're more likely to go out and do that. You know, it's.
So I mean, there's been moments in my life where I've been down about something or a bit anxious about stuff. I can't run. Mm-hmm. I really struggle to go out and run when I'm feeling that way. But when I was training for the London Marathon, just found myself getting happier and happier. I mean, I thought I was really happy. I was really happy, but I found myself getting happier and happier and happier. And of course, my distances were going from 1 kilometre to 2 kilometres to 3 kilometres to 5 miles to 10 miles. And then on a Sunday, I was going out 18, 19 mile runs, which is ridiculous. Never done that in my life.
It takes a while as well. You're like saying bye to the family. They're like, you're going long. I'm like, yeah, a few hours.
2 years to get to that point. And then I would get up at 4 o'clock on a Sunday morning and I would be out by 4:30 and I'd get back about 7:30, 8 o'clock. So that was there.
So you had the day.
The day, yeah. And then ran on the marathon. Amazing. Like, best day ever. Like, genuinely, best day of my life. And I know that sounds weird because I've got my wedding day, kids being born. Nah. The London Marathon is the most positive experience of my entire life. And then straight after that, my running kind of went like that a little bit.
Because you have a bit of that where you're exhausted.
Yeah, don't need to run for a while. I'll just eat for a few weeks.
Yeah.
Lost all my toenails.
Oh, it is brutal, isn't it?
It was banging.
Agony. I think a rhino overtook me at one point. It was so hot.
Yeah, yeah. It's hilarious, the costumes. But then I allowed my running to drop. Like, I kept running.
Yeah.
But instead of going out maybe 5 miles, I would maybe do 2 miles.
Yeah.
And then instead of doing a 5K, I might do a 1 or 2K. And it was just getting small. So I was still running 3 times a week. And what was really interesting is after 3 or 4 months, I physically felt myself getting heavier again.
Yeah.
And in here, I could feel it coming down. Like, mm-hmm. not entirely unhappy, but I could feel it.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is over this last wee while, I've upped my miles again.
Yeah.
And already physically feeling better. I'm feeling it in my clothes a wee bit better.
Yeah.
In here, I'm feeling a wee bit better. And so running, I think running can save lives. And I know there'll be people watching this who hate running.
Yeah.
I kind of hate running.
Yeah.
And there'll be a lot of people thinking, I'm not a runner. I'm not a runner.
Yeah.
I'm Phoebe from Friends. I'm not a natural runner.
Yeah.
But changes you.
It really does.
You mentioned runner's high. Mm. I remember reading and hearing all my days about runner's high, thinking, okay, I mean, I believe it, but how good can it be?
Yeah.
Turns out pretty good.
It really, but even when we know, we still have, as you say, like, you know you should do it.
Yeah.
Like, I did a story the other week, it was in the morning, and I was saying to my listeners, you just gotta go. And the voice will keep coming. Why am I going? I could do this. I could do that email. I could do that. Go. Just keep going. Keep going. Keep going. Get out the door and go.
Yeah.
Because it's like a constant battle. Even though I know I'm going to have a better day. I'm going to feel better. There's all the, but do that. And time's so precious.
Yeah.
Especially when you have kids. Yeah. Like, I just feel like some weeks I'm just surviving, juggling everything. But if you can make what percentage of your day, you know, half an hour or something to have that time.
No, it helps immensely.
Yeah.
So, but I think again, we're all different. There's so many different things we can all do.
I know,
to help us
when you're grieving and stuff. And chapter 10 was, I was in tears in my bed when I read that. You know, just the way you sort of told the story about, you know, going to the hospital. Because I think when my kids were born, there's such a song and dance, you know, when someone comes into the world.
Yeah.
And then I've not had the experience where I've lost someone, like I've been there to watch them go. Almost did, like when I saw my dad, I was like, I thought he was dying pretty much that week because he was so frail and I was holding his hand, but he wasn't like really there anymore when he was like really ill. But with you, and I've got a lot of friends that have, you know, sat with their parents when they've lost them to cancer or something awful like that, and I guess it must be such a tough thing to go through, and the months following that, to try and process everything. I mean, what would you say to people?
Firstly, it's okay to feel shit.
Yeah.
Because it is shit.
Oh, yeah.
What was really difficult was so my dad was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in, I think it was tail end of 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you get diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, 99% of the time you get told you've got 6 months.
Yeah.
And you'll be lucky if you get 6 months. It is one of the most aggressive cancers. It's the fourth biggest killer. And there is, I think it's 4 or 5% of people survive.
Wow.
Or get to, is it 5 years or something like that? It's 4 or 5. I mean, the figures are awful.
It's really bad.
So my dad, for about 2 years, had been told that he had really bad indigestion.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a phone call one day. I was just pulling up at the house. I got a phone call from my mum to tell me that we've just had the results back and it's cancer and your dad's only been given 6 months.
Did they take 2 years to give him a blood test?
So what happened was they went in the first year. You've got indigestion. No, that was kind of it.
No tests?
No. Had they got it in that year, if they'd been done something a bit more investigatory, is that a word?
Mm-hmm.
They'd have found it.
Mm-hmm.
But they did go in. They went in, they did a wee exploration. I'm using all the medical terms here. And they missed it. So the way it was described to me was, if you imagine all the kind of lymph nodes and things being like that, you know, there might be a little bit of cancer on this one,
mm-hmm.
and there might be a little bit on this one.
Yeah.
And they reckon what happened is that they went in and scraped this one.
Oh no.
So they didn't investigate enough. It wasn't thorough enough. Yeah. Because he got the all clear. So then after another few months they said, look, we need to do something, and they made 4 little incisions, and they went in and they came back and said, oh, you're absolutely riddled with it. So I remember when that news came in, thinking, right, I've got 6 months maximum. And that was about October. So this was going to be last Christmas with her dad and all this sort of stuff. But he actually fought for 16 months.
Wow.
So it was quite awkward the following Christmas when he was still there. Because we'd had our big final Christmas. And it was so emotional.
Oh.
This big final Christmas with my dad. It'll never happen again. By this point he had 2 grandkids,
mm-hmm.
my son and my brother's eldest, and you know, we it was the most magical Christmas.
Yeah.
Like I say, the following Christmas he's still there and we're like, this is a bit shit, isn't it? Like, last Christmas was way better. And he was doing alright that next again Christmas, and he was described as an anomaly.
Wow.
Because you don't last more than 6 months. So then, round about, it was early 2012, he had a little dip over Christmas, and he had to get another stent fitted and all this sort of stuff. But then early 2012, he got the opportunity to try a new drug,
mm-hmm.
Which they'd never tested on humans before. It'd been fairly successful. I don't know what they test on, rats or whatever. Of course you're going to take it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're told it might be a miracle drug,
mm-hmm.
and him and one other man of a similar age with the same type of cancer signed up. And then they got the potential wonder drug. It was about March the 17th or March the 18th, 2012. They both got given this drug, and they were both gone by the 20th of March.
Oh my goodness.
So that was, wow. That kind of took us by surprise, because actually he'd been doing really well.
Yeah.
Even though he wasn't meant to be there, he was doing really well, and then he was gone. And we sat with him. What was really hard is we watched the deterioration for 16 months.
Yeah.
And he went from being a guy with a great big solid belly, uh-huh, to a sack of bones.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked horrific. People would walk past him and they didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
And then we sat with him, as you mentioned in the book, and it was just shit. But after that, there was a natural anger, which comes anyway in grief, but we were angry because they had used this drug.
Yeah.
But my dad agreed and signed a form that said this might kill me. And looking back now, I get it. Mm-hmm. Well, of course you're going to take it. It might work because you're not going to survive. So this might be the answer. But then unfortunately, only a few months later, my mum was diagnosed with cancer. Oh. She was diagnosed with cancer, which was just a huge, shitty fucking thing, because we were just like, are you kidding?
Enough now. It's
like, this is bollocks. Yeah. Fortunately, they did catch hers right at the start, and she went for huge surgery, hysterectomy and a few other things, and she got the all clear over. Actually, she's now past that 3-year mark where they go, right, you are all right. Mm-hmm. So we had this other part of the journey to deal with. So you're grieving for your dad, mm-hmm, then you're going, well, shit, actually, I might lose my mum now.
Yeah.
And we're a close family, you know, so, yeah, it's hard. But, again, I think we're all different with the grieving process, mm-hmm, and it's just a case of happy memories and remembering the good times, and you kind of have to suck it up a wee bit.
Yeah.
What can you do?
I know.
You can't bring them back. You can talk about them, mm-hmm, but one thing I will say is it's still takes me by surprise every now and then. I could be having an amazing day, feeling great, just come off stage somewhere, kids are healthy, everyone, business is going well, a song on the radio, mm, or if I know, it may not even be that, and just boom, you have to pull over and you're just sobbing your heart out,
goodness,
because your dad's not there.
Yeah.
I turned 40 in about 2 weeks and I still cry because I've lost my dad, mm, and I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
But I know people who haven't grieved.
Oh yeah, I've seen it. And it's masks, it's things like alcohol or, exercise. Probably when you need to take a bit of a break, mm-hmm, from exercise to let your body grieve, or not eating, or all these kind of things.
There's one or two people I know that it's the anger behind the eyes, you know, right, and it's building and building, and there's nothing like a good cry.
How do you get, like, I've pulled friends aside in the past and made them cry.
Yeah.
Like, actually, and just cried with
them. And
they
haven't even lost anyone.
But yeah, I remember, like, the only way I could get one friend to cry was I just started crying. I was just like, I'm so sad for you. Like,
are you an ugly crier?
Sometimes, yeah. but I was like, it's not everywhere. And life's so crap, I just want to cry for you. And then that finally got all out, and then you're sitting crying. And it's just like, we need to cry, because crying starts to heal us.
I'm a crier.
Yeah, I cry anything.
I have no issues with that whatsoever. Ali's not a crier. She's well too scary for that. But no, I'm a crier. Do you ever watch Long Lost Families?
Oh, I've not seen
it. It's the Davina McCall and Nikki Campbell program where somebody's been left on a doorstep when they were 6 months old, and now they're 46 and they find their mum.
Oh, man.
Like programs like that, I'm gone.
Yeah.
And Ali's sitting across the room going, are you for real?
It's really sore to hold it in, though. You try to not cry, and your throat starts to seize up.
Yeah.
Like, horrible feeling. Yeah. I cry all the time.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely a crier. But do you know what? Losing someone is really shit. I remember losing a grandparent for the first time. even though my gran was like 93, I think she was, you know, had an amazing life and had a tough life, but was an amazing individual. Yeah, I remember being absolutely devastated, thinking, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Death's weird. I fear death big time.
Yeah.
I am scared shitless of dying. Always have been. I don't like it. I mean, I don't know anyone that enjoys it because they're dead.
Can't wait.
But I know people who are like, I'm really comfortable with dying. Like, I accept it's fine. Oh, fuck that.
I think if you believe you have a soul, are you more science or do you believe you have a soul? Or are you not sure?
I'm not religious in the slightest. Not even a little bit.
Atheist?
I think, so I it's funny, I said to someone once, I think I'm a spiritual person,
mm-hmm.
but not in the religious sense, but I think that's a really wanky thing to say, and I don't even know what it means, but it's the only way I know how to say it. So, as a kid, I was fascinated with, this sounds really odd, I was fascinated with Native Americans. Like, really fascinated with it. Like, when kids have got footballers on their wall, I had, like, Chief Sitting Bull, and like it's really odd. But again, I've actually written about this for something recently, and it's one of those things you're writing it going, you've got a weird child gap. But what I loved, so this all came from my dad. The first time I ever saw my dad cry, he had read a book called what's it called, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, and it's all about what happened in over history with the Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And it's their story. It's told from their perspective. And I remember seeing my dad crying. I was like 10 or something. I'm going, why are you so upset? And he's explaining about this book and how it's the most inhumane human story I've ever read or something like that. And of course, when you're 10 and your dad says, don't read that.
Grab it.
Didn't understand most of it. All the different tribes' names and things like that. I didn't have a clue what was going on. But what I did become fascinated with was, well, the way they looked was cool, mm-hmm. but I was fascinated with the way they thought about the world,
mm-hmm.
about how you are all somehow connected, you're a part of a bigger thing. Didn't really know what that meant, and I was then the kid down Troon Library, where I grew up, taking out all the books, all about the Native Americans. I was just fascinated, and I couldn't get enough of it. And so their outlook on the world about kindness, love, peace, we're all connected to the earth,
mm-hmm.
in some way. You know, that's why their TPs are low, because the bones and blood of your ancestors are in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the respect for nature,
mm-hmm.
Mother Nature, planet, mm-hmm. Earth. Like, I'm not one of these people that obsesses over that stuff, but I think I believe that. I think I believe that there is something else.
Mm-hmm.
Do
you ever have signs where you think, oh, that's a higher power, or like moments? Like, I hear stories all the time of people like...
I don't know. I don't know. I'm convinced that I've heard my dad.
Oh.
Like, to the point where it freaked me out. Like, he was shouting my name from upstairs in my mum's house.
Wow.
And I'm actually saying, Ali, did you hear that? And she's going, no. And I'm saying, my dad was just shouting from the top of the stairs. But then there's that bit of me going, but was he?
Wouldn't, like, you rather just follow the, like, believe it?
Yeah, I think I do. I think I do believe that I heard my dad shouting me. Whether it was real or not, or whether it's just in my mind, doesn't really matter. Yeah. I mean, I shat it. It was really scary.
Was everyone else scared? They're like, what's...
Well, do you know, like, the true story, right? So not long after my dad died, obviously there's his funeral, and my dad liked a cigar. Not often. Didn't inhale them, but he liked a cigar. And every year when mum and dad went abroad on holiday, they brought back a box of these beautiful Spanish cigars called Saludos, and they're brilliant, really good cigars. Doesn't matter if you like cigars or not, these are good cigars, they smell amazing. And my mum decided, because there was three or four beautiful boxes of these, she was going to wrap everyone in this beautiful red ribbon, put them in a basket, and once the funeral's out of the way and everyone's then at the hotel part,
mm-hmm.
we could go around and offer everyone one of my dad's favourite cigars. Mm. And we thought, you know, that's a cool thing to do. And she tipped them off. So it was me, my mum, my brother, and Ali and Siobhan, my brother's partner, and we're all sat around Mum's table in Troon. So this is the night before the funeral, which feels weird, you know, the night before your own parents' funeral. And we're tying these, Mum tipped them all out, and we're tying these, I don't know why she chose a red bow, but we're tying these red bows. And as we started putting the bows on, so there's a light, like hangs there, and it's went like this. And we were all like, oh my God. And we're like, now whatever. And we went to start tying the bows again, and it went off and on. And we're laughing, going, that's Dad going, get your fucking hands off my cigars. What are you tying red bows on my cigars for? Fucking stop it. They're cigars. They're not for red bows. And it was really scary.
Did you take the bows off? Did you listen to him?
No. Looked nice.
He's raging.
Looked really pretty. But yeah. So like, again, in that moment, you're like, holy shit. Was that real? I have no idea.
I think the key to happiness is having an open mind. Like being open.
Oh, I think so. I think it's very easy to not have an open mind for a lot of things. And I sometimes catch myself out being too opinionated about something and too closed off to something, that kind of fixed mindset.
Yeah.
And I do have to give myself a wee joke sometimes, but no, stop that. Mm-hmm. Remember what you teach other people. And but we're human.
Oh, we're human. I get Scott saying to me, Mummy Jojo or Jojo, like, you know, if I say something, he'd be like, oh, I'm going to take a video of this and put that live. I'm like, oh, wanker. But, you know, that's the thing. We are only human, but people expect, you know, when you do inspirational stuff and the W is like really positive, they expect you to practice what you preach all the time.
Yeah.
Someone said to me recently, you're actually quite boring. I thought you were like, they were like, you're quite quiet. And I was like, well, I'm not on camera all the time. Yeah. Do you know, it's okay to have a quiet...
Like I hate crowds. Mm. I like getting up in front of a crowd, but being in amongst a crowd, having to talk to people. I hate busy pubs and clubs.
Oh, me too.
I am a very private, reserved, quiet person.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a similar thing. People are like, oh. Like, I was speaking at an event recently and I was doing the after... I don't really like doing after dinner stuff because it's... Well, not every time, but a lot of the time the audience are pished and... are done by that point. They don't want to listen to someone.
Yeah.
But and it can be a tough performance. It can go great, but I was sitting with somebody and there was just general chat around the table and we were kind of working our way around, what do you do? And it came to me and this guy to my right, what do you do? I said, I'm actually your speaker tonight. And he went, oh, you don't strike me as the sort. I went, that's okay. Then I got up and did my thing and he was like, oh my God, right, I get it. And he said, so is that just an act? And I was like, well, no. But I don't need to be switched on like that 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
I'd be knackered.
Yeah. People expect you to be like singing and dancing. And I'm like, it's performing. You are performing. Because even if you speak from your heart and soul and you mean it and you're still giving all your energy. So then you're a bit like, I don't want to speak to anyone. I don't want to sing. I don't want to.
I mean, I like speaking to people, but I find it uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you're very relaxed. The mocho. I could speak to you all day. This is fascinating. Couple of more lighthearted questions. What's your favourite ice lolly?
Oh, right. So, again, I've mentioned this already. I just spotted that my cat's been... You see my cat's been attacking me?
That's why I'm scared of cats. Scratching.
Oh, I know. They're a pain. I mean, I... fucking love ice lollies. Like, I really love ice lollies, and that's a really difficult question to answer because there's a lot of different ones pop into my head straight away. You weren't expecting as much enthusiasm about this one. So there's a range of ice lollies I love, from the boring Del Monte fresh orange ice lolly, just the 100% orange juice ice lolly, through to things like Knobbly Bobblies. Do you know what Knobbly Bobblies are?
No, I don't think I do, actually.
Chocolate ice cream in the middle, surrounded by strawberry ice cream, surrounded by a solid chocolate coating with lots of wee sugar, the tiny wee ball, sort of hundreds and thousands type things all over it. They're a classic. Wow. Love a Calippo.
I love a Calippo, yeah. What flavour?
Not the kind of ice creamy ones, you know, those new weird combination ones.
Don't like them.
So as much as I love the orange one and the lime one, actually the two greatest flavours of all time are cola and bubblegum.
Oh, I didn't even know they did those.
You don't get them here.
Oh, it's
when you're abroad. Yeah, it's when you're abroad. They have all these different flavours.
Uh-huh.
So for me, it's more the ice lolly than the ice cream.
Yeah.
So one of the greatest ice lollies of all time is the fruit pastel ice lolly
Not
with the
tried it.
different layers that come
Oh,
away.
the long one.
Yeah.
There you go.
Not that it's watering.
Good, I've got an ice lolly for
Do you know
you.
what? I fucking love them. I just need to stop swearing. It's
My
you make me swear.
favorite ice lolly. I'm going to give you one in a minute, but it's partly lolly and a wee bit ice cream, but it's refreshing.
Right, what is
You can
it?
guess. It's orange with ice cream in the
Is it a
middle.
Solero type thing?
Is that what it is? I've just blanked the word. Is that the passion fruit tropical one?
I don't
I might
know.
have a choice. I might have a
I
Fab
don't
or a
know.
Solero.
Yeah. Fabs are great. Fabs are old school. I love Fabs. They're not actually that great as far as ice lollies go. They're really boring and the flavour's not great, but it's a
It just looks cool.
fab. Yeah. I just love ice lollies. So yeah, it's hard to tell you what my actual favourite is.
Tangle Twisters are good. With the red bit in the middle.
They're just called Twisters, aren't they?
Twisters. They used
Yeah.
to be Tangle
No, they
Twisters.
didn't. You made that up.
I thought they were.
Don't mess with ice
The
lollies,
red bit in the
Jojo.
middle is really good.
I love Twisters. Because the bit in the middle is ice lolly, more sort of sorbet ice lolly,
Yeah.
whereas the bit around the outside is ice cream. So I do like that combination. But mini milks are amazing.
Oh, good. Yeah, I
Try
like
and
the
beat some
white
of
mini
these.
milks.
But there is a thing about ice lollies in my family, and the happiest I've ever seen anyone was my two kids when they found out that at all-inclusive holidays you could have as many ice lollies as you wanted.
That's a magical moment in parenting, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I've
Yeah.
put it actually in the next book. I'm talking about how that moment I saw my kids. You know the big freezers that you slide the top
Oh,
on,
yeah.
but their feet are off the ground and they're in it.
They can't believe it, can they? They're like, can we have as
Yeah,
many as we
yeah.
like? You're like, yeah,
And
but Aldi.
I want my next book to be that freezer where your feet are off the ground, you're in it, and you might pull something that just goes,
Oh,
well.
I can't wait to read it. And Zest is coming out soon.
Zest's out in July, and the next one hopefully January or February.
Oh, so excited for this. Sure, they're going to be
I feel a bit
amazing.
sick just because like you don't know how you know what it's like. You, especially Zest's. Well, it's not the second book. Brill Kid is, but it's the second adult book, so pressure's on a little bit.
Pressure is on, but you just have to keep going and know that the reviews you've had so far, use that. Like if I have a bad writing day, I go onto Amazon and I look at my reviews and I'm like, if I can do that, what can I
Oh, we've got
do?
some shit reviews though.
Yeah, but you've probably got more bigger publishers, so you've got had more reach than I have. So
Perhaps, perhaps.
you're going to have mood hoovers reading your
Oh
book.
yeah. I think what was it? What was the? There's a word that was used by somebody. They referred to. Was it glum, or twee, or anyway, there's been some brilliant words. People just like shite.
Really?
It's fine. I have no issues with that at all. The books are not everybody's cup of tea, and I accepted that a long time ago. I'm all right with that. I don't want it. I don't want just all my family and friends leaving reviews. I need to know where we stand on it.
Yeah.
But if people don't like it, I'm all right with that.
I'm quite raging. Hardly any of my friends will leave reviews. I'm like, dicks.
Get it
Where's the
sorted.
support? No, but as you
Yeah.
see,
You
I'd rather
don't.
not. I
It
don't
needs
want a
to be
sympathy
real.
review. I
No, it needs.
want one that
I read a
real.
thing the other day actually about reviews on Amazon are something like 70% fake or
Oh,
something. I
really?
maybe made the figure up there, but it's a huge percentage that are fake. I quite believe it.
But
It's the same as
they say
TripAdvisor.
verified purchase.
They do, but I know a lot of people who didn't buy it off of Amazon who have left reviews.
Oh, really?
But it's a real review. They just didn't buy it
Didn't
off
get off,
of Amazon.
yeah.
But it's the same with restaurants and stuff. I know a guy. He's not a friend, but I know a guy that runs a restaurant in Edinburgh that's not very good. And it's one of the top rated.
Which restaurant is it?
I'm not telling
No,
you.
I wouldn't make
But
you. We
I know
don't
for
want
a
to diss
but I
people.
but
I'll ask you
I
after.
I actually went in and looked at the reviews, and then I started tracing these people's reviews, and they're leaving positive reviews for everyone, and I think they're getting paid to do it.
Yeah, they're forced. Because I've been into restaurants and not been able to leave reviews because it wasn't good.
Yeah.
If it's good, I'll
Yeah.
shout them out. If it's
Oh,
bad,
100%.
I
Yeah.
ain't I
Quite
leave them
right.
on. Yeah.
Quite right.
But I'd do anything for a free meal. But
I
if it's
do,
bad, I ain't
yeah.
writing that one. And another question just to end is fave song. I'm not going to make you sing if you don't want to, but we're going to go and play it.
As we said, I love music. I mean, this is one of my favourite bands of all time. I don't wear band t-shirts, but I do have this one. My favourite song, you know, I'm tempted to pick something a bit more.
You can have two if you like.
A bit more left field.
Some people have had three.
So, okay. One is, it sounds a bit glum, but it's not, the song's not. It's called Death by a band called White Lies.
Okay.
Is
it heavy?
Ish.
Okay.
Yeah. Not heavy metal heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw them recently actually live doing it, and it was just outstanding.
Okay.
Their song means a lot to me from my time doing the Fringe. It was a real anthem that we used to do a particular sketch to, a big magic trick. So
what else?
Death by White Lies, and Let's Go Basket Case by Green Day.
Oh, I love that. Gotta love Green Day. Fab. Great. Well, what can I say? You're a legend. I know you don't like people calling you legends and stars, but I think you are. So
thank you.
Keep rocking.
And you. Thank you for having me.
Let's go and play your favourite song and have a nice lolly.
Amazing.
It was so good having you. I love your choice of song. I love hearing what people say. That discussion. Good chat to this Freddie Mercury dude all day. Loving his work. Loving the chat. Don't stop me now. Don't stop me. I love the feeling when we lift off. I really do, actually. Watching the world so small below. I love the dreaming when I think of the safety in the clouds out my window. I wonder what keeps us so high up. There'll be love beneath these wings. If we suddenly fall, should I scream out? I'll keep very quiet and cling to my mouth as I'm crying. So frightened of dying, relax, yes, I'm trying. But fear's got a hold on me. Yes, this fear. Hold on me. Yes, this fear's got a hold on me. Yeah. Oh. Quite ironic me singing this song when I talk to you a lot about just releasing that fear. I love the quiet of the night time. When the sun is drowned in a deathly sea, I really do. I can feel my heart beating as I speed from. The sense of time catching up with me. The sky set out like a pathway. I love the words. But who decides which route we take? Well, that would be you and me. As people drift into a dream world, I fold my eyes as my hands shake. And will I see a new day? Who's driving this anyway? I picture my own grave. Whoa, fear's got a hold on me. Feeling a bit scared now. Yes, this fear's got a hold on me. 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 Oh, right, I'm going to leave it there. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Give Gav the love. Give him plenty of stars. He's a star in my eyes. I'm sure he's a star and many, many other people's too. But most importantly, I hope he knows deep down that he's a star. And I hope you do too, because we're all freaking awesome. And we just need to release that. The mojo's still in there, I promise you. Sometimes you just gotta wake up. Mwah.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.